Good morning, Southside. Let's see. No, I'm not editing the first page out already, but I'm going to set it aside over here. All right. So, Children's Church is getting ready to get started. You can head out the back door with grace if you wish to go down. Otherwise, that means I've got you for the next half hour. All right. If you're visiting with us this morning, thank you for choosing to visit Southside. And if you would, please consider staying for a few minutes after service so we can get to know you. I do see there are a couple of people here that I don't recognize. So we would like to get to know you. Well, if you've been with us for the last couple of months, you know that we've been focused on the Psalms. In today, and if you don't know, the Psalms are generally broken into five different books. We've covered the first three so far. Today, we're starting into the fourth book, which includes Psalms 90 to 106. Each of these books has a theme to it. And book four, its theme is the God of Israel is the King of all creation. You know, that kind of follows a little bit with what Evan was talking about. Because that creation, sometimes we see as a very small space right in front of it that we're aware of. But that creation really is much bigger. There's not a chance I can get my arms wide enough to be able to convey the immensity of that creation that he is the king of. So let's talk a little bit about Psalm 90 as a way of introduction. It's the only psalm written by Moses. Think about that for just a second. That out of 150 psalms, Moses got one. So that also is significant because that makes it the oldest psalm in the Psalms. So it's the one that has been around the longest. It also meant that God believed it was important enough to preserve it from Moses' day to get it forward to the Psalms, to the books that we have today. So it must have an important message for us. Let's go back and look at Moses' role. What was Moses' role in his day? He was the mediator between God and the people. So not only is this an important psalm for us, but it's been brought to us by somebody who was a mediator between God and his people. Now, every psalm has some points to them that are kind of, you know, I'll say a key theme to it. And you could look at Psalm 90 and pick out probably multiple themes. However, I'm going to look at a key theme is time. Okay? In Psalm 90, time is described with a number of phrases and words, like everlasting, all generations, 1,000 years. So it has multiple references to time. Now, so let's look and talk for a few minutes about time before I actually get into the text. Well, one of the things that I like to do is to see if my understanding of a term matches with what the people who like to do our dictionaries have to say. So I looked up and said, what is everlasting? Trying to provide some context, make sure I am using the term correctly. And I was a little surprised. There's multiple forms of the word. First, it's an adjective, referring to lasting forever or a very long time. In the noun form, it's a literary term meaning eternity. Now, here's one of these fun facts that I read and went, really? The fun fact that I learned, it's a flower in the daisy family. Yeah, there we go. I was hoping I was going to get some hmms about that. Never knew there was a flower that was named everlasting. There you go. So there's my fun fact that I've shared that will make no difference by the time I'm done here today. But what is everlasting is God. God is everlasting. God is unchanging. No matter how much things change, God stays the same. So now, what is time? Is it something precious? Is it something valuable? Is it something finite? We talk about time every day. One of the things I did was I went through the Bible just to see how many times the word time was used. I gave up counting because it's in every one of the books in the Bible. So I gave up trying to add them up. I'm not a math person, I admit. But we use the word time pretty freely in our vocabulary. We'll ask somebody, do you have some time? Do you have a minute? Do you have a couple of minutes? How many times have you done that? Usually in frustration with our kids, we'll say, and that's happened time and time again. So we use the term pretty freely. But when we use the word time in our vocabulary, what is it we're really asking? Well, we're asking generally if we can interrupt or if we can take their time from them. So now, our relationship with time. For humans, time is finite. Each of our hearts have a certain number of beats. We don't know how many. It's one of those things that we don't know the time. Yet God is infinite. He was here in the beginning. He's still here. And we'll be here long after we're gone. There is and should be comfort in a relationship with an everlasting God. That means he's not going to change. He's not going to go away. He's going to be the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Is time important to us? Why? Why is time important? So I thought about trying to do this in like a Family Feud type effort with this next question. So this is kind of like the interaction period. So I created my own list that I've got here of things that we spend our time on. And I've got my list. Now I'm going to be curious what other things you can add to that list. So what are things we spend our time on?
Work.
What?
Work.
Work. Ding, ding, ding. I got that one. It came from multiple. What?
Sleep.
Oh, sleep. Oh, gee, as much as I like that. I didn't put that one down. Okay. Eating. Y'all can tell I like that.
Relaxation.
Oh, relaxation. Why do we, okay, that's a good one. Why is it that we want to spend time relaxing? And considering I just served Easter dinner last week, that's one I probably should have thought of.
Entertainment. Okay. Anxiety makes you want to hide in your chair.
Ooh. Should we spend much? Well, never mind. I'm going to get there. I'll get there in a little bit, Danny.
Worship.
Okay.
Serving others.
Education.
Reading.
What was that one?
Reading.
Exercise. Okay. So... Some others that I had on my list that I'm surprised didn't get tossed out, but maybe they're just so common that we don't think about them as things that we spend our time doing. Watching TV. Okay. Now, playing with kids or playing with grandkids. Now, that's why I got some heads not going up and down on this one. That's probably one that comes to mind for me because I have two grandkids that come and are with us 4 days a week. So that one is keen in my mind. Ladies, I'm surprised you didn't mention housework. And guys, some of you too, because that's something that we spend time on. Okay, I'll accept that. You didn't want to talk about housework, so it didn't come up. Okay. I'll just move on then before I put my foot in my mouth any further. How about prayer and study time? Well, that gives me a good list to work from. So, Evan.
I have one more, and it just came to me because I remember hearing this, and it blew my mind. We spend 6 months of our life at stoplights.
So if we can spend 6 months of our lives at a stoplight, then we must spend a lot of time commuting, which probably falls broadly into that category of work. 6 months at stoplights. Yeah, I'm my mind is now just gone. Could go a lot of different ways, and I'm going to try to avoid that. Do we change over time? Gee, we change over time. Our attitudes change, our thoughts change, what's important to us changes. We change in a lot of different ways. But God doesn't change. That's the one solid point that we can always hold on to. God doesn't change. So, as we start to go through now the verses of Psalm 90, I want us to think about time. And if I don't spend too much time up here, well, that's not pleasant. I'm almost out of time already. I hate it when you get through the introduction and you haven't even gotten to the text yet. Okay. As we work through Psalm 90, I think it's just worth a mention that we need to consider a little bit of the view of God's word in that time, and a view of God. We have a view of grace. However, in that time, there was far more a view of judgment and wrath and punishment than there was of grace. So let's keep that in mind as a framework for what we see in Psalm 90. Starting in verse 1. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Well, so commentators believe that the 90th Psalm was written during the time that God's people were in the wilderness. And in fact, written in the later years of that. So we've got a backdrop then of God's judgment, God's wrath, and they've probably been out in the wilderness for north of three decades by that point. So this is a backdrop that Moses is writing from. During that time, Israel didn't have a home beyond the tents that they were traveling with. So the one constant that they had was God. God was their dwelling place. So here's our first consideration of time. If God were not everlasting, if God changed, would God make a suitable dwelling place? No, because we wouldn't be able to count on that. This is the same God that Israel counted on. It's the same God that we count on. We feel all these things, many of the things that we talked about that we put time into, are done at home. Why? It's supposed to be a comfortable place. It's a place that we feel safe. I know, at least for myself, when I'm traveling, whether it was while I was employed in business and traveling nearly every week or coming home from a vacation, I really liked getting home, having my bed, my house, my comfort. Verse 2, before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. So being out, whether it's in the wilderness, in the woods, or you're out someplace where you can see mountains, we don't get to see a whole, in a city like in Milwaukee or in Chicago or even suburbs, we tend to be a little isolated from seeing the majesty of God. I don't know about you, but the only mountain that I get to see around here is only about 100 feet tall. So you lose a little bit of that majesty. However, Moses got to see, and God's people got to see God's majesty every day. whether it was the mountains in the distance or the plains that they were in. So we can get a little lost in the focus of seeing the majesty of God's creation. It can obscure our vision. Verse 2 tells us, before the mountains rose up, before the forests grew, before the rivers and streams and creeks flowed, God was already at work. So he had a start in his getting the majesty ready for us. Verse 3, you turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. Well, verses 1 and 2 have recognized the infinite and everlasting nature of God. Now the psalmist recognizes that we are finite. We're not going to go on forever. We're going to see an end. Now, commentators, at least that I read, don't necessarily believe this was referring to judgment, rather simply identifying that we as humans are finite, and contrasting it with God's infinite nature. And it's not even the first time in the Old Testament we've encountered this idea. Genesis 3:19 says, by the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. A 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. So the author has started out recognizing the everlasting and infinite nature of God and our finite nature. So now we see some more passage of time. But God is above time. He doesn't recognize time in any way that we recognize time. We recognize things like seconds, minutes, hours, days, years, centuries. God doesn't recognize that. We try to use duration to satisfy our human need to understand, to try to put bounds around things, bounds that God does not recognize. Now, 1,000 years, at least to me, seems like a long time. But to God, it's a day. So our understanding of time is completely different. Sometimes simple phrases in Scripture can be lost on us today. Some of you know that this is something that I've been intrigued by in recent years, is that phrases that we've read dozens of times have a lot more meaning than we give them. And one of those is here in verse 4. The last part of verse 4 says, or like a watch in the night. Okay, we've gotten really used to taking our phone and touching the phone and seeing the time on it. Or looking at the clock radio on the nightstand and seeing the time. If you're a little bit older, you probably had a watch with a luminescent dial so you could see time at night. How did they see time at night? Because they didn't have a phone. They didn't have a clock radio. They didn't have a luminescent dial. They would have been unaware of time at night. So time was something that I'm going to suggest was less important to them. We have no real idea of the passage of time as far as God is concerned. Okay, so now starts the real editing. There were a couple of these verses that I really liked that I do not want to completely let go. So verses 5 and 6 create some pictures for us. The other thing I really like is word pictures. So these verses also struck me. I don't think Moses is really still talking about judgment here, but hold on, that's coming. In verse 5, yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. In the morning it springs up new, but in the evening it is dry and withered. So what I really think Moses is doing here is he's reminding us, as if we really should need reminding, the transitory nature of our lives versus the everlasting nature of God. Again, we're reminded of the passage of time, like a sleep or a watch in the night, where they wouldn't have been aware of time. And then the word picture that I think describes our lives. They are like new grass in the morning. Now, if you're one of those people that has to get up or likes to get up, that was the wrong word. Yeah, likes to get up early in the morning and watch the sunrise. I admit, I'm not one of them. And I'm seeing a number of heads doing this, and that's okay. I am not one of those either. But I do know people that are. That are up before the sun gets up. They get to have a little bit different view of God's creation. So visualize this in your mind. Feel free to close your eyes if it helps. And think about what you see. It's dark outside. The sky in the east is just beginning to turn pink. Some more time passes. It continues to get lighter. The sun is just starting to get high enough that it's peeking over the trees or the mountains or the barn on the east side of my property, and now you're starting to see streaks of sunlight. The grass is wet with dew. As the sun continues to rise, it gets warmer. The flowers on the plants begin to open. And before we know it, we're now being warmed by the sun. I think that's a pretty cool description of life starting. If you think about that, God puts that display on for us every morning. However, after morning still comes evening. So, by evening, we're tired, dried, withered. I think it can be a pretty apt description of how our life can be. Then, one evening, it's done. So, remember a little bit ago I said that we weren't talking about judgment, but we get to verse 7, and now we get to see the judgment that they've been concerned with. Verse 7, we are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. God, who stands over time and sees 1,000 years as a day, has the vision, right, and authority to judge mankind, especially his own people. A right that I might add, we don't have. God's people, during their time in the wilderness, had seen God's judgment. They had lost whole generations of people. Whether they were consumed as a result of judgment or consumed as a result of natural causes, they were still consumed. Moses must have been crushed to watch his people pass. Not unlike we have seen in recent months and years as we've lost friends and relatives. In verse 8, you've set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. God sees all of our iniquities and failures, whether they be accidental or deliberate. The New Testament speaks of this in a little bit different terms. It refers to the book of life. I think that's the same book that Psalm 90 is talking about with their iniquities being laid before him. God sees the good, the bad, and the ugly. God sees it all. The idea of secret sins was something that struck me. You know, I bet we all have a secret somewhere. I know I do. I'm sure everybody does. It's part of being human. The fact that we ever thought that any of those secrets could be kept from God is a little amazing. Skipping down to verse 12, teach us to number our days, that we might gain a heart of wisdom. Considering the limits of human existence, understanding the shortness of life, numbering our days is in itself wisdom. But why is it so hard for us to number our days, to consider the importance of the days that we've been given? We're able to, in Moses' day, they were able to count their flocks. They knew exactly what was there. We're able to add up our income and know how much money we'll have. We're able to determine our net worth. Yet understanding that our time and our life is finite and those days are important seems to be a little difficult for us. Sometimes it takes life-changing events for us to think of the importance of those days. I know I've had to. I know I've gotten the opportunity, even though I didn't want to learn those lessons. I know I've gotten the opportunity to learn those lessons and start thinking of my days differently. One commentator said, "To live with dying thoughts is the way to die with living thoughts." Let that sink in for just a minute, and I'll repeat that. To live with dying thoughts is the way to die with living thoughts. In other words, number your days. As many of you know, I lost my younger brother at the end of last year, and my youngest brother had a health scare recently. And so I've been learning, by the way, he's fine, okay? It was one of those things that we seem to hear about more frequently, a medication that they put him on after a few months had a very negative response that put him in the hospital. So those kinds of scares or those kinds of events are the kinds of things that help us learn to number our days. But the text seems to indicate that it's not just an innate thing that we know how to do to number our days. Verse 12 starts out and says, "Teach us to number our days." So that seems to indicate that it's something that we have to learn. I hope we all can learn that. Then we continue to look, as most of the Psalms do, they deal with wrath, they talk about a problem, and then we get to solutions. And so verse 12 started that. What is Moses' response starting in verse 13? He starts to pray. He starts to talk to God about these problems. He says, "Relent, Lord. How long will it be? Have compassion on your servants." There's almost a measure of, I want to call it, impatience in this. Relent, Lord. How long will it be? He's asking God to, in a sense, to put it in terms that we might use, God, can we move this along, please? Can we get a little bit of relief from this? Now, when we need God, sitting around and idly waiting doesn't demonstrate that we want him. In fact, it may demonstrate, do we really care that much? God wants to hear from us. So God continues this prayer for the remainder of Psalm 90. And he wants us to be glad, or he wants to be glad for as many days as they've been afflicted. Now, remember where we started. How long have they been afflicted, likely, at this point? decades that they've been going through this time in the wilderness. So God is asking for a time of healing that's going to be a long time. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. Remember earlier, they were consumed by God's wrath and terrified. So they're looking for relief. And Moses closes his prayer in verse 17 by asking for God's favor on their work. One of those things that we spend a bunch of time with. As limited as our days may be, having the favor of God makes our work and our life worthwhile. Satisfaction and gladness in success and work in our lives come from a right relationship between God and man. Then notice at the very end of this prayer, how does Moses close it in verse 17? Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. It was not uncommon when you really wanted to emphasize a point. You said it once. Twice meant, I really mean it. Sometimes it even happened three times if you felt that you really had to underscore the point. I'm not going to read it a third time, just to underscore the point. But establish the work of our hands. So, now what I'll ask, and I'm not going to ask for the feedback, but what I'm going to do is suggest, do you have any slightly different view of time, the importance of time, what we could spend time on, whether it's spending time in prayer, whether it's spending time in study, what we're really asking to do is to have God involved in our lives. If you have a need this morning that you wish to have the prayers of the church, or you have a need that you wish to make known, this is the time that we can come and respond to God's invitation as we stand and sing.